Listen up, marketers. If you're not taking advantage of retail media, you're missing out. That's why eMarketer has launched Retail Media Weekly, the first newsletter focused on the rapid growth of retail media. Get deep insights and exclusive data you won't find anywhere else. Gain the edge you need to explore this explosive marketing channel. Visit insiderintelligence.com/retail-daily and subscribe today. Hello, listeners. Today is Wednesday, July 26th. Welcome to Behind the Numbers, Reimagining Retail, an eMarketer podcast. This is the show where we talk about how retail collides with every part of our lives. I'm your host, Sarah Lebo. Today's episode is Back to School. Before we jump into that, let's meet today's guests. Joining me for today's episode, we have VP of Content on our retail desk, Susie David-Canyon. Welcome back, Susie.
Thanks, Sarah. It's nice to be back.
Good to have you. And also here for today's episode, it's senior analyst Zach Stambor. Hey, Zach.
Hey, Sarah. Hey, Susie.
Let's get started with our first segment, news and reviews, where I give the news and our guests tell me their reviews. Today's story is a July 19th one from The Verge titled, Amazon says it'll ditch plastic padded mailers. Those white and blue mailers that are constantly clogging the entryway to my building are headed for retirement. Amazon has been criticized for its wasteful packaging, but the company still hasn't set a date for this specific transition. Susie, your review of this story in 60 seconds is...
So it's like a lot of other headlines, right? It's great headline, good for marketing, but it kind of feels greenwash-y because there is no deadline behind when they're going to ditch it. And probably more important than the no deadline is that they're saying they're going to do this with their owned business. But according to our forecast, about 65% of sales come from the marketplace from the 3P sellers. So while they're going to be able to control part of that in some wishy-washy way over time, is it really going to have as big of an impact as it sounds like they're going to have, given that they can only control their own output? And I would add to that, okay, so they get rid of the plastic bags, but what about all the plastic stuff in the boxes? So I just feel like it's meant to be all about corporate citizenship and being a good, sustainable partner, but it kind of fell flat for me.
I totally agree. This sounds like greenwashing. It sounds like Amazon putting a message about sustainability out there that isn't really that actionable. Zach, your review of this story in 60 seconds is?
I totally agree with Susie. Totally agree with you. These plastic mailers are a real pain. Most plastic doesn't get recycled. Even if you do recycle it, it's a pain to recycle it. My wife makes me collect our plastic stuff. We have a huge space in our closet where then I then drive it to the grocery store. And so it's a pain. I don't like them. I don't know why they don't shift just to the paper mailers. It doesn't seem like that big of a list. I suppose these are hurtier, but I do think it's rather suspicious that they didn't give a date for when they will get rid of these. It's not a great sign for what they're looking to do.
I saw on Instagram, yes, I do get some trends from Instagram like everybody else, that apparently there are some envelopes, plastic ones, where you can turn it around and the return shipping is on it, which I thought that was pretty cool, right? So like that certainly makes it easier for a consumer, removes a lot of the friction about returns, but I don't think that's the kind of envelopes we're talking about now, but that could be potentially something that they do as an in-between step.
I think that's interesting, but like how many of those envelopes will ultimately be returned, especially for Amazon, where you don't need to stick it in a package to return it.
Oh, because you take it to Whole Foods?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, that's why. Yeah, it could be. I don't know. I feel like if you did a canvas of your closest friends, I'm not sure how many people actually take the time to take it back to a store. I guess it depends if you're close to a Whole Food.
Well, the recycling messaging on them is suspicious to begin with because it looks like it's recyclable, right? Like it says recyclable, but it's in this one specific way where you take it to an Amazon mailer center and recycle it there. It's not like generally recyclable.
Right. I actually didn't realize that they were recyclable.
Okay, it's time for our next segment. Retail me this, retail me that. Where we discuss an interesting retail topic. Today's topic is back to school. because it's nearly back to school season. In some parts of the US, it probably already is. And US back to school retail growth is slow this year, according to our forecast, at about 2.9% over last year for a total of $72 billion in back to school retail spend. That's pretty much in line with overall retail sales projections, so not slower than the rest of the market. But tell me, what should we be watching for this back to school season?
Well, you called it slow. I don't know that it's slow. I think it's just normal, old normal growth is what I'm calling it. It's roughly in line with what we've seen over the years. The pandemic was the exception to that. But before the pandemic, back to school sales growth was 1.3%. So this is significantly faster than that. So I think it's just kind of normal. And that's kind of the retail environment that we're in now, is just this old sort of kind of normal growth pattern.
And I have so much to say about this. So I think there are like two big, big things. One, it's back to school is always cyclical in terms of it's never the same sustained growth year on year, just because of the nature of what people are buying for. I think we know from research and just probably from the people you know who are buying for back to school, the younger kids, you spend much more time buying supplies and clothing because they're constantly outgrowing them. And then the older kids, you're just replenishing stuff and then buying more electronics for them. And so I think that also is part of the cyclical nature of back to school in terms of, I don't know if it's like every 3 years, you go back to the same numbers, but there is something around every back to school season is a little bit different. And I think this idea around normal is kind of like a, you know, microcosm of what's happening. There are a lot of different headlines. Are we in a recession? Are we not? Inflation is slowing. What does that mean? There's retail sales growth. Where are we at? It's kind of the same for back to school. If you think about it, we've seen lots of studies where they're projecting massive growth. We've seen studies where they're projecting that it's going to see a decline. We've seen some where they're saying people are going to spend up to $500 a child in back to class. But then we're also seeing, you know, it's so moderate, the spending, that it's like $250. So I think that's the message. Everything is changing and nothing has changed. But what truly I believe is like the ongoing impact of COVID is that the way people are shopping and how they're thinking about shopping has changed, and that'll be there forever.
Yeah, pulling out some of those studies that you just referenced, the NRF is predicting that K through 12 spend will grow significantly, like 11%, and back to school spending on college age students will soar 27%. Meanwhile, Deloitte has K through 12 spending declining at about 9%. So a lot of mixed messages here.
It's interesting. Two of the primary categories that make up back to school, apparel and consumer electronics, have been struggling. And so what I'll be watching for is, how are people shopping? Do they get the new pair of shoes for the first day of school? Do they splurge on the TI 84 plus color graphing calculator? Are they good with the hand-me-down?
Is that still a thing?
I think so. I don't know.
Awesome.
I had a TI 82.
I had a TI 84.
I don't even remember.
Did you?
I had a TI 84, but not the color one.
Yeah, the color one. So are you going to splurge on the color one? So we'll see in terms of how consumers spend. I think what we'll see is just, you know, people are looking for opportunities to save and they will seize upon those, but they're not going to be pulling back entirely.
Well, and you know what? I also think that people have always looked for value, right? And so value is starting to, you know, we think of the equation of value as quality and price, but I think more and more we're adding time savings. And so a lot of the channels where we think there will be a little bit stronger growth potentially are the ones where it's like a one-stop shop, where there's a lot of assortment, there's a lot of choice. It's easy to compare price against different brands and the private label, so that it makes shopping, you know, across multiple categories that much more efficient for families. I think I'm going to keep an eye on those channels. And also, one of the newer things for me, I don't know about for you guys, it's around the different types of payment and like, how are retailers making it easier, whether it's tap and go, or whether I was just reading about where kids can download apps and the parents put money in the app so that the kid can buy whatever it is that they want. Because one of the issues, and we talked about this when we were talking about pets, is, you know, the purchaser and the user are are not really the same for back to school stuff, right? It's the parent that you have to convince. But at the same time, the kids have an outsized influence on the purchase, even though they don't have the money for the purchases. And so like, how as a retailer can you sort of court both at the same time in an efficient way?
Love this perspective, Susie, that shopping for kids is just like shopping for pets.
Oh, no, but it's because pets are a part of your family is what I meant.
I want to talk more about how people are shopping because e-commerce growth is a slightly different story than overall back-to-school retail spend, according to our forecast. We're forecasting just 1.5% e-commerce growth over last year, and e-commerce growth is going to remain at about 40% of overall back-to-school sales. So 40% of those sales will be online. Should we be concerned about e-commerce growth not growing anymore?
No, I think it's fine because if you don't look at the comparison to last year, but you look to pre-pandemic 2019. In 2019, it was about 30%. And so if things had progressed in a normal pattern, we hadn't had a pandemic, we'd probably be about here. So I think this is just the normal sort of spot where you would expect it to be.
So is penetration going to remain at that 40% mark?
I mean, 40% is kind of high if you think about it, because when we think about total e-commerce penetration in the US, it's like 15%, right? And so, yes, it varies by category. And as Zach was saying, two of the more dominant categories in back to school are apparel and electronics, which skew higher in penetration overall. So it's not a surprise that it nets at around the 40% mark for back to school. And I anticipate it'll sort of trickle up in line with regular e-commerce penetration.
And then back to that conversation of value, we've seen the holiday season stretch out, pulled even further by Prime's early access sale in October. Has the back-to-school season also stretched out in the same way, and has Prime Day had an effect on this?
So I think back to school is a little bit different than the holiday shopping season because, generally speaking, there are maybe five or six different, you know, holidays that people are celebrating, but in that same sort of time where it's gift giving. So there is a starting and end point kind of, if you think about it. Whereas for back to school, every region has a different start date for school. So some families have already started going back to school. Whereas, for example, on the East Coast, they're going to start after Labor Day. So I think because back to school doesn't have one set date, it's a little bit harder to measure. Yeah, for sure, Prime Day kicks it off. I think there are lots of studies that show, and I saw one by TransUnion using Dynata, that by now, which is middle of July, it was like 35-40% of people have already started shopping, like have begun the shopping process. So yes, it is moving forward. Is it triggered by Amazon Prime? Probably not just by that.
But I do think people seized on the opportunity. Looking at the Adobe data, stationery and office supplies were up 76% year over year. And then the other key categories within the back to school, apparel was up 17%, consumer electronics was up 18%. So people are looking for a deal. They see that the sale's going on and they click and buy.
Yeah, that's so different from, you know, when we were kids. And I had one day at Staples where I bought everything I needed.
But you know what? It's interesting because there's a difference between buying the basics and then buying, you know, stuff that's off of the list that you're supposed to get in terms of school supplies, but also like t-shirts and uniforms, if that's what your school is doing, versus the like fun, fashion-y items. And you see that people are pulling forward their basics because they're trying to get a good deal. But then kids go to school to check out what's new and what's cool to then potentially get their parents to get them that item.
So on that topic of fun, fashion items and what's new and what's cool, when I was a kid, all the coolest kids seemed to already know what bag you needed that year, what clothes you needed that year. They had some knowledge that I wasn't privy to. So my very abstract question for both of you is, where does this concept of coolness in back to school come from? And does it wait until the school year starts, or is it already in motion?
I would think it's all right. I mean, I grew up with a uniform, so I don't know that I'm the most qualified to talk about it as an individual. But from what I gather in the research and from previous lives where we've done research about the cool factor. Kids are on their phone constantly looking at Instagram at the time, TikTok now, whether it's magazines or TV shows. I think you would be surprised at the places where kids get awareness about the cool factor and then start to want to envelop that coolness. And then there might be, I don't know if I'm out of turn, but there might be a pecking hierarchy at school, which also dictates which of the trends that you see on social become cool in your school. And I feel like probably not every trend hits every school in the same way.
I think that's absolutely right. I think there's a trickle-down effect as well, as you know, one kid gets it and that kid saw it on TikTok. And then even if your kid isn't on TikTok, they saw that kid and so on and so forth.
Well, that's what is interesting about TikTok over Instagram is that TikTok's algorithm is like so powerful, so local, and so like shareable that you can have the kids at your school probably be on like a pretty similar algorithm that the school across town might be a little different from.
Which is really cool for department stores and other brands, but also makes it really hard, right? How do you stock the right inventory in the right store at the right time so that you're, you know, you capitalize on the second largest shopping season, but that you also don't get stuck with a lot of inventory?
Yeah, because that can really mess with your entire holiday season.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very hard to get rid of inventory that nobody likes.
Okay, let's keep moving. Now it's time for pop-up rankings, where we take a look at specific examples and we rank them. Our question today is, in an okay market like the one we're seeing now, what are the things you need to do to be better than okay? In order to talk about this, Susie and Zach will be ranking the top four retail innovations from the back-to-school season. Susie, you go first.
So I'm going to go with Clinique, and not because I'm ranking it as a top four, but because I think it's a really good example of an old brand who is known to be like the first skincare brand that a lot of young folks use, who's trying to sort of get with the times, as you would say, and reinvigorate and re-envision their marketing campaigns. And so last year, they started a brand ambassador program on college campuses, and it was a pilot, and it worked well enough that they're now rolling it out. And in addition to, so it's not only re-envisioning, and so having a whole new way of getting, you know, word of mouth and getting the influencer and all these other buzzy words in one program. But they're also trying to make a whole series of different touch points that come together to service the brand ambassadors on college. So they're doing pop-up stores in select cities. You know, they were apparently at Coachella with a immersive hub where it was informational about SPF creams. They're doing pool parties across April and May. As we said, school starts at different times depending on the campus you're on. So they're doing pool parties April and May across different states to try and get people excited about their product. And they're doing digital advertising, social media pushes. I mean, it's a really well-oiled machine, all with this intention of getting kids that are going back to college to use their brand.
These brand ambassadorship programs are really smart. I was talking to the Kendra Scott, the jewelry company CMO, a while ago about how they've leveraged popularity on TikTok with Alabama Rush TikTok alongside a brand ambassadorship program. It's so inexpensive for these companies. I mean, it's as cheap as gifting a few products to people. And then from the student perspective, you get free products, you get something on a resume, and you get some help building up a following.
And it's like, you know, you're only going to do it if you believe in the brand, right? And so like your classmates and the other kids will trust you because you're part of the same sort of group. And in Clinique's case, I think what's really cool is that they're not doing a one and done sort of, I'm doing a brand ambassadorship program and that's it. They're building a whole activation series around that concept. And it started even with NFTs. I mean, they're really throwing a ton of activation around this particular program so that it can feel more successful and that they're hitting people where they are, which is really the like marketing 101. Be where people, have your message, create awareness and this use case where people are, meet them where they are.
I totally agree on that. Zach, why don't you give us another retail innovation that stood out to you for the back to school season?
Yeah, I want to talk about Walmart, which is meeting people where they are in a very different sort of way. So Walmart's offering sensory friendly hours for customers with sensory disabilities on Saturdays in the first couple hours of the day throughout the back to school season. And what that means is the stores won't have music. the overhead lights will be dimmed. The moving pictures on screens will be static images. And I think this is just like such an interesting innovation. They're not the first retailer to do this. In the UK, Toys R Us was doing this, I think, about a decade ago. Target has done this over the holidays. But this, I think, is the largest back-to-school push. And back-to-school is a really important in-store experience for a lot of students. And a lot of these students with sensory issues were never able to experience that sort of dynamic. And so this welcomes them in. And in doing so, I think they could be building some lifetime loyal customer relationships.
Yeah, I think this is a great idea. I think stores should always be quieter and less overwhelming. I think that retail media folks might disagree because when you make some of those images static, you're slowing down that opportunity. But I'm all for this.
Well, and it's also kind of, it's a sizable segment of the population that has these sorts of issues. And so for a lot of retailers, they've just been ignoring them or pushing those people online. And so the estimates are it's like 5 to 15% or so. And so that's a lot of people to push aside. And it's also a lot of people to welcome in.
And I think this is like in direct contrast to the top story where Amazon was like pretending to be part of sustainable efforts, but it was a bit sort of gray zoned. Whereas this is like, they're not, you know, maybe they did send a press release to get the word out so the parents knew. Walmart is a gigantic retailer in the US. So it is so nice to see how accepting they are of all the different cohorts. And they are really working so hard. Last year, I thought they did some very interesting innovations in terms of live streaming and all the back to school concerts with really famous people that were in that sweet spot for the younger population. And so I just think that they're continuing to push the envelope across fun and maybe a little bit more difficult topics that are really important to address.
Yeah, I mean, this is a marketing tactic for Walmart for sure, but it's also tangible. Like, it's also a real thing that they're doing to make the store more accessible.
Well, it feels authentic, right? If you think about who their associate population is and how the associate population too is a mix and match of all types of cohorts, I think it's nice that they're doing that for their customers as well.
Okay, Zach, can you give us our next back-to-school retail innovation?
Yeah, it's not so much an innovation, but just leaning into value. Amazon has a really kind of funny commercial or ad with Randall Park where the pitch is spend less on your kids. And just it really focuses on how if you just buy everything on Amazon, you can save a lot of money. Walmart is doing something similar where it's saying it's letting parents shop for the 2023 school year at 2022 prices. I think about 80% of the back to school items are the same price that they were a year ago. And so in this environment in which people are watching their wallets, it's a good tactic to just hone in on value.
Yeah, good use of Randall Park too, right? He's the dad in Fresh Off the Boat. Did I get that right?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Yeah. So good use of leaning into that sort of dad character. Zach, what is our fourth and final retail innovation you're looking at this back to school season?
Build the big niche that's out there. And so I don't know about you, but when I went to college, I went to Bed Bath & Beyond and just bought a ton of stuff for my dorm. And those stores don't exist anymore. And so Target is looking to fill that space. They have a college registry tool that shoppers can use to fill their cart. They are offering shoppers 20% off, which sounds familiar to Bed Bath & Beyond shoppers. It's a one-time coupon, but that's a decent amount of money when you're headed off to college and you're buying just a ton of stuff for your dorm. And so I think it's just, it's a really smart tactic because I don't know where else those shoppers are going to go.
Yeah, this is so smart. We talked about this in a recent episode where we talked about what happens when brick and mortars close. Bed Bath & Beyond is like the college shopping place. Target is seizing an opportunity to become that space and to become that space before Amazon can fill it because it has the brick and mortar advantage. I think that's a really smart move.
Well, I don't know. I think Macy's can fill it too.
I don't know that you're going to go to a mall instead of like a Target when you're pulling up to college.
So I think you're definitely right on that one. But I think companies like Target also and Macy's and others have these like mobile vans where they try really hard in one way or another to be on college campuses with, you know, bring their stuff to college campuses versus have college kids go to their stores. I imagine it's the same for all, you know, every retailer has that issue. I do think I'm, you know, all kidding aside about Macy's, although I do believe it, I do think any retailer who is doing data analytics will be able to see, you know, what are the Bed Bath & Beyond stores within an X mile radius of their own stores to try and capture that customer and do some very targeted marketing to those customers to get them to come, even put billboards or signs or some other sort of non-digital marketing near those Bed Bath & Beyonds that are closing to signal that, hey, we're here to take you and welcome you. So I do think Target is in a good place to capture some of that customer, and they should watch out because there'll be a lot of competition for that business.
I think Target quite literally is in a good place because they're probably geographically near those closed Bed Bath & Beyond stores in a lot of cities.
I was going to make the same point. And I was also going to say they are well positioned because Target has like a cool vibe to it that is very much in line with college students, whereas like Macy's or even the Container Store doesn't quite have.
Yeah, or Walmart for that matter, right?
Sure.
So we're back to the topic of coolness. I would be remiss if I didn't say that after our brick and mortar episode, my mom texted me and said that she no longer has a bag of expired Bed Bath & Beyond coupons in her car. She threw them away.
Well, if she did, she could use them at Target.
They're gone.
Your poor mom.
Okay, that is all we have time for today. So thank you for joining me today, Susie.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you, Zach.
Yeah, thank you.
Good luck back to school shopping. Please give us a rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts and follow us on Instagram at behindthenumbers_podcast. Thank you, listeners, and to Victoria, who edits the podcast and is too cool for school. We'll be back next Wednesday with another episode of Reimagining Retail and eMarketer podcast. And tomorrow, join Marcus for another episode of the Behind the Numbers Daily. Can return is nice, though, because then you get the
5 cents back.
The one time in college, we threw a party on our can return money back.
Well, especially it's Michigan, so it's 10 cents.
Yeah.
Oh, 10 cents. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. We threw a whole party on can returns. Don't include that in the podcast, but it was
just the bloopers.